You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we return here with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and we are back with another Taco Tuesday episode with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. As we continue another week in the offseason waiting for free agency, waiting for the draft, but that does not mean that the content stops. Spencer, how are you doing today?
Doing quite well. We're in that dead zone area pre-free agency where, you know, the mock drafts are starting to come in, but people haven't really finished their evaluations yet, and we're still finding, you know, there's still Power 5 starters and guys that are probably going to play on an NFL field next year that most people have not seen themselves yet. So all those draft guides and all those different things are still being compiled. So it's kind of tough, but we love to do the mock drafts, and you can end up getting some crazy players in like the fifth and sixth round of mock drafts. And the combine is not going to be what it usually is. So an interesting time. You got places like XOS training in Florida, and they're having, you know, a little mini combine, but none of the teams are allowed to go. So weird time. The pandemic goes on, but so does the NFL offseason. So here we are.
Yeah, this is a kind of a weird time here, and the mock drafts we're seeing and that we're doing now, they're going to look much different come even just past a couple days of free agency in March, and then you head into April and May, so we'll end up seeing what goes on with those mock drafts. But Spencer, there have been some roster moves across the NFL over the course of the past few days and the past couple of weeks. Minor ones, but a major one that did happen is that the Houston Texans and J.J. Watt agreed to mutually part ways, making Watt a free agent and giving him his pick of any NFL team that he wants to go to. And one team that has been kind of making the rounds is the Ravens as a potential option. And J.J. Watt on this Ravens defensive line, I mean, he would be an absolute stud. He's not the player he once was, but Spencer, how likely do you think it is that the Ravens will make a play for J.J. Watt, or at least place that call in to see what the interest is with Watt and the Ravens?
Yeah, I believe that the Ravens will certainly have some interest there. Their entire edge situation, the defensive front in general, is in a flux right now, so it certainly wouldn't hurt them too. I believe there's a little bit of a misconception that Watt isn't still playing at a high level, where he, you know, was pretty much the only real player up front for the Texans in a very, really, really horrible year for their defense this entire year, but commanded more double teams than anyone who, you know, plays outside of the B gap as an edge player. And while Watt is, you know, not the exact same that he was, he still has incredible pass rushing IQ. He's still strong as hell. He can snatch guys, push, pull, do anything he wants. He sets the edge so incredibly well, makes plays in the backfield. Tight ends can't even, you know, sniff J.J. Watt. They just kind of get thrown on their face mask as they're passing by. I read a little bit on PFF about what they had been discussing with, you know, J.J. Watt being a edge player on the first two downs and then kicking him inside to play as more of a defensive tackle in pass situations. And he's generated an immense amount of pressure when he gets lined up over guards. He is just too quick and too explosive for guards with that IQ. He's seen it all at this point. Health, obviously, a little bit of a concern, you know, a guy who's had some tough injuries and things like that, but he ends up in the driver's seat of his own destiny. I think that teams like the Green Bay Packers would make sense for him for sure. A couple other, you know, maybe the Dolphins, who knows what he wants to do ultimately, but the J.J. Watt train will go on. He will be finding a new team for the first time, and as I mentioned, you know, if you can get him into a front where it's Calais Campbell and J.J. Watt and get those two guys, you know, relatively healthy, who are you going to double team? And whichever one you don't, they're going to make you pay. I think that would be an interesting way to attack the Ravens offseason. J.J. Watt is a versatile piece. You can move him around. I think that he would excel in the Ravens defense and provide them with a really rock solid edge setter. The only issue being that, you know, he is older. And at this point, the Ravens have Calais Campbell. They have Brandon Williams. And that's it. Everybody else, other than Justin Matabuike, you know, I believe Jelly Ellis is even a free agent. They still have Broderick Washington, who didn't leave much to think that he's going to be a quality starter unless he makes some leaps and bounds. And we'll have to wait and see on that. But I don't want to put that in the bank. But at this point, you really only have Justin Matabuike. That's a guy who can be a long-term guy that has a future ahead of him. The rest of it, you know, just Brandon Williams, even in the last year of his contract, Calais Campbell has one more year, and it's a tough scene. So It's going to be interesting to see what direction the Ravens go in. You'd think that they would maybe want to aim towards someone with a couple years in the tank, but Watt probably has, you know, a good 2-3 years left, but it's just difficult. A guy who's had some injury problems and played at the highest level, been a defensive MVP, been the most disruptive player in football at one point in his career. So I think they'll definitely sniff around it. And if Watt, you know, wants to make a play to go to a team where they're perennially successful and somewhat of a stable organization, I think that the Packers and the Ravens would be two good places for him to look. The grapevine rumors, I believe Tony Grossi in Cleveland was saying that, you know, released a report that J.J. Watt does not want to go to Pittsburgh and play with his brothers, which, you know, kind of felt like it would be an interesting situation. But Pittsburgh is in their own weird spot with Ben Roethlisberger themselves. But at this point, I still believe J.J. Watt is playing at a high level. He's extremely disruptive. Commands double teams, like I said. There wasn't anyone in that Houston front to take the double teams away from him. They had DJ Reader last year, the guy that was disruptive in the middle, and you couldn't really just let go one-on-one. He ends up in Cincinnati and being hurt and things like that. So, difficult situation, but I don't really understand the Texans not trying to recoup any sort of pick. I get that you want to do right by J.J. Watt, but, you know, work with a team that wants him. Get a day three pick at the least, but it is what it is. The Texans are a mess. They have not been, you know, making logical decisions throughout this entire past couple of years, starting with the DeAndre Hopkins trade and even some things before that, you know, trading for Laremy Tunsil and trading what ends up being the number three overall pick this year to get a left tackle and then now ship off a quarterback potentially doesn't want to play there. So did you need that left tackle? Maybe not in hindsight. Might be better to have a guy under contract when you're trading for him. That way they don't have leverage and you have to trade all of those picks at the same time. But it is what it is, and J.J. Watt will not be a part of that.
Yeah, it is what it is. And for the Ravens, it potentially gives them a shot at getting one of the better pass rushers in the entire NFL. Still, even though age has caught up with him, the injuries you mentioned could be a concern there as well. But Spencer, when talking about J.J. Watt's value in terms of a contract, do you see him signing maybe a one-year, $10 million deal based off of what you know and what you think his value is, and especially with the salary cap, I think not being what a lot of people expected it was going to be at this time last season. What do you think J.J. Watt will end up getting on the open market?
I believe that he wants to go somewhere where they win, and I don't think he would be willing to do a one-year deal. He seems like a loyal, you know, has some emotion involved in things that he does, and I think he wants to be somewhere where he's wanted, and they want to pay him, and they want to have him in their plans for the next couple of years, maybe Seattle, mentioned the Packers. I don't know if a one-year deal makes a ton of sense. I think he kind of wants to finish his career with a successful franchise and go get a taste of what it would be like to be on a competent team and a competent organization that is sound and perennially competitors and contenders more so. So at this point, J.J. Watt will, I'm sure, get a ton of looks, a ton of offers. Maybe there's a team like Jacksonville or something of the sort that's up and coming, and you know, maybe he wants to go rebuild something that's fresh and has some opportunity. But it ultimately feels like he wants to go somewhere stable and be a part of a thorough organization where he doesn't have to be the star, but he can be one of many. And to me, you know, Seattle, Green Bay, Baltimore, those all make sense. So we'll see. The Jets obviously have a ton of money. Robert Saleh coming in, being a great defensive mind and playing alongside Quinnen Williams, them potentially having a better situation. Or the Colts. The Colts would make a ton of sense as well. As they have a really competent defensive structure, play along with DeForest Buckner, Darius Leonard, and some of the real absolute madmen that they have in that Colts defense. That could be a place to take them over the top. The Colts have been in a competitive position, but again, they have an unsure quarterback situation, and it's going to be interesting to see, because if you go get a rookie quarterback, then it feels like that might impact the way you want to go defensively and the way you might want to look at the next year or two, as opposed to looking at the next, you know, 5-6 years. So if the Colts are able to go get a Kirk Cousins or something of the sort, as opposed to drafting a quarterback, I think they have two different layouts for how they want to build around that team. But right now, you know, Aaron Rodgers not going anywhere, Lamar Jackson not going anywhere. Those would both be logical places. So it's going to be interesting to see what he gets. I think he gets, you know, maybe a 2-3 year deal where he would not have a ton of dead cap as a result of cutting him after 2 years, waiving him after 2 years, and maybe something like, you know, $13 million a year, $12 million a year, He'll definitely put some fans in the seats. Everybody knows J.J. Watt. And like I said, I think there's this misconception that because of how poor the Texans defense was that he can't play at a high level, when he absolutely can and does. So, yeah, I think he commands, you know, a couple years and a little over $10 million a year.
Yeah, that sounds just right in the ballpark with where I was thinking as well. I think Watt certainly still has plenty left in the tank. He deserves to play for a winner, and now he has his choice of wherever he wants to go. And I think that he's going to pick wisely. I think the Packers are a really nice fit for him. I also think, again, the Ravens are a nice fit, as you mentioned, and then a couple of other teams in there as well. But we're going to head into our first break, and when we return, we'll be talking about some comments that Matthew Judon made. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. There are real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And we are back with our second segment of this Taco Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still here with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. And Spencer, the edge position for this Baltimore Ravens team is certainly going to be one to watch over the course of this offseason, with five of their six edge defenders who were on the roster in 2020 set to be free agents, one of which is Matthew Judon. And Judon had some comments that he said to Josina Anderson, and he said, quote, "I just want to go somewhere where I can win some games. Clearly, I don't mean just three or four. I mean, you love to be wanted. Hey, I also may be a Raven for a lifetime. I don't even know yet, but we have to see." End quote. So, Spencer, with these comments from Matthew Judon, it seems like he is open for a return to Baltimore. And from what he said and from what I've seen out of what he's been posting on multiple social media platforms, I do think that he is open to it. But when you ultimately look at the cap situation for Baltimore and you look at the potential price tag that Matthew Judon does have heading into this offseason, how likely do you think it is that Matthew Judon is in Baltimore in 2021 and beyond?
The likelihood is up in the air right now. It's tough to say. The interesting scenario that actually quietly started to surface today is that the TV deals, apparently the NFL is trying desperately to put into place over the next month. And that's why they haven't announced the cap yet. And it's getting to a point where it's a little late on them announcing the cap for the 2021-2022 season. So, you know, everybody's projecting a really low cap this year. And, you know, to not be able to, teams having to be really frugal, going to be a ton of cuts, things like that. We do see J.J. Watt, but that felt like it was even a little different than needing. That didn't have to do with needing salary cap. J.J. Watt didn't want to be there. Texans felt like they needed to do him right. But if those TV deals get done, there is no way in hell the cap is going to be $180 million. That is going to instantly boost the cap, what projections for revenue are. And I'm still curious to see what everything comes in at with TV viewership going up as a result of fans not being in the stands. I think there's an interesting perspective on that because, you know, local revenue, in other words, from the stadium, from the tickets, from all of that stuff. That also does include merchandising and things like that. But merchandising doesn't feel like it took a huge hit this year. TV is low cost, high revenue. Stadium costs, local costs are high cost, high revenue. So the word revenue gets used, and the NFLPA does tie the salary cap to revenue, which befuddles me a little bit, because let's say ultimately that the 2020 revenue was down, which it was. I think it's reportedly was down $2.7 billion. But how much was profit down? How much did teams really lose? Did they gain money? In 2018, you can kind of see this because the Green Bay Packers are publicly owned, so all of their information gets released. The TV revenue after the $5 billion that the NFL takes off of the top gets divided among the remainder gets divided among the remaining 32 NFL teams. The Packers in 2018 reported $276 million. In TV revenue, which comes, you know, very little cost to them. Then in 2019, it was up to $291 million, an 8% increase, just about. And with TV viewership reportedly being up substantially from last season, you know, could it be a 10% jump? Could it be a 15% jump? If it was a 15% jump, basically based on some numbers that I checked out and based on some articles and projections and things, if it was up 15%, that would negate a loss of the estimated profit per team from local revenue is 8%. So if the TV revenue was up 15%, which accounts for a much larger percentage of teams' overall revenue, for instance, the Ravens made $171 million in revenue off of local revenue in 2019 versus the $291 million in 2019, then I think it would offset those losses and potentially even, you know, put you in the green a little bit more because that cost is cut and people might have been at home. So an interesting scenario. And how does that tie into Matt Judon? The original question is, feels like the Ravens are kind of biding their time. Eric Tomlinson, a guy that they signed for $1 million, they're bringing him back. They've made a couple other moves, restructuring guys, but not a lot of news on that front. Not a lot of intent or anything. And with Yannick Ngakoue and Matt Judon and Tyus Bowser being free agents, you know, it's kind of difficult to see all three of them walking away. You have three guys that are pretty meaningful front seven players. You have a really sparse and Pernell McPhee even as well. Derek Wolfe, another guy, you know, feels like they're kind of biding time. And if those TV deals do ultimately come through, then I think that impacts what goes on. And I think we'll have more news in the next couple of weeks on that and how much these teams are actually going to end up having in cap. And to me, Matt Judon, for my money, is the best bet. He has already played consistent snaps. He doesn't, you know, miss time. He's played a ton of snaps. He can rush the passer. He can defend the run. He can drop back into coverage a little bit. Whereas Ngakoue is probably a better pass rusher overall. And, Tyus Bowser's a little bit better in coverage. My money's on Judon to be, you know, the most versatile chess piece there, the one that's consistent enough across those three facets of his game. And I think he would be the best decision overall. There's all these rumors about him wanting $20 million, and he comes out on his Instagram. He's like, I literally never said that. You guys just make stuff up. If that was the case and he thought he was worth $20 million and he wanted $20 million, why would he go back and refute that and step on that? I don't know. Speculation there, but, you know, guys do crazy things and tons of false news and liar's luncheons and things like that. But ultimately, you know, Matt Judon feels like he values winning, feels like he hasn't deleted all of his Ravens social media posts yet. So it feels like the Ravens are kind of maybe asking him to hold on tight a little bit and they're going to try and figure something out. I don't know. But ultimately, I feel like it's pretty 50-50 at this point. It feels like if the cap comes in a little bit higher than, you know, that $181 million figure that got floated about a week or two ago by Tom Pelissero, that ends up being 195, maybe that's Matt Judon right there. And if they sign him to a 3 or 4 year deal where his cap hit can be, you know, $5, $6, $7, $8 million in the first year, it's not disabling you from making other moves in free agency and shoring up other holes, bringing other guys back and, you know, getting a wide receiver, getting an offensive lineman, whatever you want to do, add some depth. But if the cap is $180 million, it feels like it might go the other way. So I think depending on what the cap is, that kind of will factor more into the Ravens' decision as there are developments coming out about those TV deals. The TV deals were not supposed to be done or through until next year. But if those numbers come in early, then the league can project earnings. Based on the projected earnings, they do a cap. That's the way it works on a basic level. So at this point, it feels like the Ravens are biding time. And like I said, Judon, not dismissing the idea of returning to the Ravens. He mentions the Ravens, still talks about the Ravens. He had glowing remarks about them, about how, you know, he's had an amazing time there. It wasn't like, all right, I'm a free agent. Like, they didn't give me a long-term contract. Screw them. So here we are. And I think we're not quite sure. I think it's still up in the air. I think Eric DaCosta is still up in the air, trying to, you know, wait and see how much capital and resources he's going to have, what's going to happen with Orlando Brown. There's a lot of decisions to be made, and this is going to be a pretty busy offseason for the Ravens.
Yeah, it certainly will be a very busy offseason. And as I mentioned, the Ravens do have five of those six edge guys going into free agency. The only one currently still on the roster is Jalen Ferguson. So, Spencer, when you look at outside of Matthew Judon, you have Yannick Ngakoue, you have guys like Jihad Ward and Tyus Bowser and Pernell McPhee. Out of those guys, and including Judon in there as well, how many of Baltimore's pass rushers would you expect back in a Baltimore uniform in 2021? Because it seems like there will be some turnover at the position. I don't think Baltimore can afford to bring back all of the guys that are hitting free agency. So how many of Baltimore's pass rushers would you expect back in a Baltimore uniform in 2021?
I would not expect Pernell McPhee to play another snap in a different uniform. At this point, I think that he likes playing in Baltimore, taking a small contract and being in that rotational role that helps keep him healthy. He's had a ton of injuries, a guy who's played ultra physical throughout his career, and keeping him in that 20 to 35 snap range per game feels like the sweet spot. He's not being asked of too much physically. He's able to maximize the reps that he does have. He feels comfortable in Baltimore. He's produced the best in Baltimore, had some dominant games this year, you know, played really well against the Titans in the playoffs. So I think Pernell McPhee is absolutely back. Jahad Ward, I think, is a really strong candidate, again, because of versatility, because of being able to play against the pass and the run, to come back on a multi-year deal that is cheap. The guy's never been paid before. He was a second-round pick, so a little bit back then, but has been bounced around and cut and waived and picked up and all these different things. And he always wants to be on the field. He feels like he's always reaching or speaking out about how he wants to play more. I think a return to Baltimore would make a ton of sense as well. So bringing those two guys back is low cost and gives you a nice base. It makes you less desperate to have to go find anybody and have a full position group there. And then, you know, among Bowser, Ngakoue, and Judon, I would be quite surprised to see them have three capable, you know, especially two of them homegrown and have ascended players, and have see all three of them leave would be a little bit surprising, especially considering where the Ravens are right now in terms of, you know, averaging 12 wins a year over the last 3 years when you include the playoffs. So it's a rock and a hard place, but I believe we end up seeing Ward back. I think we end up seeing McPhee back on a one-year deal. And then again, I think that one of those three, Judon, Bowser, or Ngakoue, will stay. And maybe it's Ngakoue. I mean, for if it was me, I'm and it's most things are equal, production versus dollars, I would want Judon. But Ngakoue is a guy the Ravens have been eyeing up for years. They've spoken about that multiple times. They've wanted to try and acquire Ngakoue for quite some time now. They finally do it at the trade deadline. He comes here. He's a pretty local guy. And the Ravens end up having Calais Campbell here, and Calais will be here again next year. And it feels like a good spot there. So between Judon and Ngakoue, it just feels kind of silly to let all three of them go, as well as Bowser. And I just don't see that happening. So I think we end up seeing Ward, McPhee, and at least one of those three back.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think that, again, the Ravens can't afford the trio of Bowser and Ngakoue and Judon, but I think it'd be not foolish, but I think the Ravens have built up something with their pass rushers, kind of like what you mentioned there, Spencer. And to be able to have the kind of depth you can get with Pernell McPhee and Jahad Ward, you can bring those two back, and they've shown production. They've shown that they're not just bodies who are just there for the depth. They can actually go in there and make impact plays, and then you can sign one of those three studs back and still have a pretty solid foundation there with Jalen Ferguson as well. And then you can address it during free agency or during the draft, whatever the Ravens feel more fit to do with that position. But we're going to head into our final break now. And when we return, we'll be talking about the Purple Prospect Portfolio. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible to stock all the parts you need into a traditional chain storefront. Wire and drive from pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing only the brand his warehouse happens to carry. You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, locked on there. How'd you hear about us box so they know we sent you? Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. And we return here with our final segment of this Taco Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher is still here with Spencer Schultz. And something that Spencer has begun to do on Baltimore Beatdown is the Purple Prospect Portfolio. It's quite the alliteration title, and honestly, I love it. It's kind of hard to say, but you get the hang of it pretty quickly. And so Spencer has been looking at a prospect every day for the Baltimore Ravens and just their game in general and putting it on Baltimore Beatdown. And so far, he's looked at a couple of prospects, and Spencer, I wanted to ask you about what you've seen out of those prospects so far and in terms of how you think they'd fit on the Ravens.
Yeah, so I'm trying to aim first and foremost at players that I think could come in and make an impact in Baltimore. So, you know, make sense schematically a little bit, while that can be a little bit difficult to evaluate, and then as well as being NFL ready. So it's guys that I initially look at that feel like they might fit the bill, and then I just want to go through their game and figure out what they might need to work on, what they do bring, and then how they would factor in. The three guys that I've started with, I'm initially starting with the three positions that everybody wants to talk about: wide receiver, offensive line, and edge. The first guy that I started with was Jalen Mayfield, a tackle out of Michigan. I like Michigan linemen. I think they're really, really, really well coached. A ton of them get put into the NFL. The Ravens got one last year in Ben Bredesen. We saw Michael Onwenu able to go make a huge impact in New England. Cesar Ruiz coming out of Michigan as well and ending up being a first-round pick for the Saints. So a ton of talent there. Tons of other guys as well. But with Jalen Mayfield, he is an interesting prospect to me. He is an unbelievable athlete for his size. 6'5", you know, reported to be six. We haven't gotten actual measurements on them. They're juniors. They haven't been at a combine to get measured or anything at this point. But from what I've read around, about 6'5", 320 pounds in that area. Good basketball player. He's a 4-star guy out of Michigan, state local. And he is a dominant run blocker. He is able to really torque and kick out against five techniques. When someone plays outside shade to him, he has a devastating combination of leg strength and core flexibility and strength as well. I think his hands are a work in progress, but anyone who lines up outside shade or an inside run concept, you can run right behind him. He removes them from the club. He bounces them from the club, puts guys on their backs a ton. He can crash and drive inside, a fluid combo blocker, worked a ton with tight ends, worked a ton with Ben Mason, who is a fun kind of H hybrid, kind of Kyle Juszczyk type in Michigan that definitely is going to have an NFL home. But seeing him able to work into the second level really fluidly, he's a monster on screens, has a ton of those Michael Orr blindside blocks, putting guys into the sideline, driving guys out of the frame of the All-22 or of the broadcast. Time and time again, as a run blocker, it's really hard to poke holes in his game. He is dominant. He has good hand placement. He's aggressive. He's a fluid mover. He doesn't get out too far in front of himself, nothing of the sort. As a pass blocker, he has room to grow. He only really started one full season. I think he played three games as a freshman, redshirted, and then played a full season in 2019, then comes back. He opted out originally. Michigan announced their schedule, and he was granted a special waiver to go back to Michigan. He played two games there. And in those two games, he looked like the real deal, completely dominated. But still, in pass pro, he's great feet. He's a quick mover. He has good foot speed. But he's really passive, he struggles with hand placement still in pass pro. The good news is that his feet are always in the right place, his shoulders are always in the right place, but not a ton of advanced hand stuff yet, you know, faking a jab so that a defender kind of reaches their hands out, and then he can get them moving one way and then lock them up. He hasn't really been able to successfully lock guys up with his grip strength. He doesn't really, you know, he's not really able to hold. He's not able to grab some inside jersey and lock them up and prevent them from using. I don't think he's fully activated his length, but doesn't get beat around the edge. He has good length. He has powerful hands. He's still improving with hand placement. As I said, an ultra young guy, 21 years old, but doesn't get beat around the edge. He is susceptible to some inside counters. As if he oversets a little bit, guys can, you know, beat him back. Then he has to wash them back down. Spin moves can get him from time to time, but how many guys even spin? So basically I think he is an NFL, you know, maybe elite run blocker in year one. I wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, PFF grade him out really well and put guys on their backs. He is awesome in screens, in the screen game. He can pull front side, basically kick out and loop out as the front side tackle and get out in space outside the numbers. All those things while he's developing in pass pro. I could see some hiccups, some initial, you know, problems against really advanced rushers on that side. But he just needs to activate his physicality a little bit more. And like I said, he's starting in a good place. His feet are in the right place. His shoulders are in the right place. It's just timing and being a technician with your hands a little bit more so and baiting guys one way so that you can wash them out. So I think that he has a ton of upside by the end of his rookie contract to be an elite pass protector. A lot of other, you know, if you read other reports, they'll project him to play guard. Some say that he can play left tackle. But I see him fitting that right tackle role really well, being the road grader, being physical while he's working in pass pro. And I think that the difference between right tackle and left tackle is a little bit overstated. But at the end of the day, quarterbacks do have better vision to their right, especially if they're right-handed. So a work in progress there. I think he would be a fine pick. I have a first-round grade on him. He would be a fine pick at 27 for the Ravens. Then I went ahead and I looked at another Big Ten player, Rashad Bateman, a wide receiver out of Minnesota, another junior, another 21-year-old. Bateman is the most polished wide receiver, A.J. Brown comes to mind a little bit. A.J. Brown was quite polished, but he does have some weaknesses and some extreme strengths. But the names that come to mind, I don't love comps always, but the names that come to mind about Rashad Bateman are Michael Thomas and Keenan Allen. Somewhere between those, a little bit faster than Keenan Allen, a little bit less physical and a little bit more finesse to his game than Michael Thomas, but somewhere a healthy mix between those two. Rashad Bateman can sink his hips just about as well as anyone, creates a ton of separation. He has a double move savant. He has a big catch radius. He catches balls outside of his frame all the time. There are different sites had different things about drops. I did watch six games of him, but PFF, for instance, in their draft guide listed him as having a 14.3 drop percentage. And then Sports Info Solutions, the company I work for, I didn't do any of his games or grade any of his games, but I went and looked him up in our system, and he dropped 3 passes on 56 targets, 40 something catches last year. And not a 14% drop rate. I saw one drop throughout the six games. That was like a concentration drop where he was kind of open. It was against Maryland, and he had some room to run and just tried to tuck a little bit too quickly, and the ball kind of flew high. But a lot of the other stuff was, you know, really difficult catches. Nothing I thought was egregious. And like I said, he's a natural hands catcher. Big catch radius, can catch away from his body. His prototypical X receiver size, somewhere in the 6'1", 6'2" range, reportedly around 210 pounds. Dangerous after the catch. He can run away from defenses. A lot of people list his weakness as his speed, but I wouldn't consider his speed a weakness. I would consider it, you know, good, not great. He reminds me of Justin Jefferson's speed. Like, he's not going to run away from cornerbacks that he doesn't have an angle on. And bust off, you know, 80-yard touchdowns. But if he's moving past people, no one's really going to catch him from behind. So I think that he's really complete. He uses his hands well in his routes. He knows how to push off. I like to say that he has a Goldilocks push off. He, you know, it's not too strong. It's not too weak that they can fight through it. It's just right. He just assists them out of the way and gets to it. Nothing egregious. It doesn't make cornerbacks fly out of the way, but complete route runner, can run every route in the book. Understands timing. He sits down against zone really well. You see him sneak past linebackers. And another, you know, interesting part, I like to consider his career kind of the Uno reverse card to Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson in 2018 plays pretty much exclusively on the boundary at LSU in a less competent offense. He looks good. Doesn't have a ton of production. You know, okay, modest production. Not a lot around him. And not a great offense playing in the SEC there. Plays primarily on the boundary. Switches completely exclusively to the slot in 2019. We all know what Justin Jefferson did at LSU in a Joe Brady offense, in a very competent offense. Looked outstanding. And Rashad Bateman kind of had the opposite happen. 2018, he plays on the boundary exclusively. Ends up lighting the world on fire. He's the Big Ten Receiver of the Year. He's a finalist for the Biletnikoff Award. He tied the Minnesota record for touchdowns and was second in yards and receptions all-time in Minnesota's program. And obliterates, dominates, really good competition. Big Ten cornerbacks are no joke, and completely and utterly dominated. Minnesota had a pretty good offense, their highly ranked team at one point. Then they, you know, come into 2020, pandemic year, weird year. They switch their offensive system, a ton of RPO stuff. So he plays in the slot for the most part. Played out wide a good bit still, but played a lot in the slot, throwing in more slants, more stuff over the middle of the field. He's tough. He does a really great job shielding the ball away from defenders. And, you know, if quarterbacks can kind of protect you, he does a good job protecting himself and protecting the ball. Good in contested catch situations, you know, which Ravens fans really want, is a big catch radius, like I mentioned, but not outstanding production. He did have 3 100-yard games out of 6 games, but didn't seem to light the world on fire the same way that he did in 2019. Tyler Johnson was there in 2019 as well, which helped for sure. But, you know, the offense kind of backpedaled, and he wasn't quite as dominant. People weren't jumping for joy over his production this year, but did have a young breakout. You know, if you're into the entire fantasy dynasty thing, you had a young breakout age, a high dominator rating, all that good stuff. So the only real problem I see with his game right now is that on the line of scrimmage, he has really long legs. He's not the tallest guy in the world. Maybe he ends up being 6'2.5" or even 6'3", but you know, not the tallest guy in the world. But his waist, when you're just looking around at other players standing by him, his waist is really high. He has super long legs. He has a really long, leggy stance. You're supposed to put 70% of your weight on your front foot, 30% of your weight on your back foot. That way you can kind of just cleanly lift that back leg up more easily and drive off of your front foot. Most snaps, he false steps. He basically lifts up his back leg, which then takes a small step, and then he propels forward. And why that's an issue is at the NFL level, there will be more jams. There will be more, you know, technical jams, and corners will be able to thwart him at the line of scrimmage a little bit more. But the good news is that, number one, it's easily fixable. And number two, when he false steps, like I mentioned, his back foot propels forward first. That shows you exactly where his stance is supposed to be, because then he drives forward. So he just needs to narrow his stance a little bit. His feet can't be as far apart. He needs to stand up a little bit straight, put a little bit more weight on that front leg. And there are reps where it's like that. And his knee is bent in the front a little bit more. You don't see a super wide or a super elongated stance, and he comes right off the line of scrimmage. So that's the only thing, like I mentioned, should be a quick fix. You got guys that the Ravens hire to be on their coaching staff in T. Martin and Keith Williams that have worked with a slew of outstanding receivers. None of them have false step issues. So I think that'll get cleaned right up. Other Minnesota receivers also did it quite a bit. I don't know why it would be a technical advantage. Maybe against off coverage it is, so that they can kind of re-square themselves. The line of scrimmage is the only thing I can think, but you know, it's fundamentally at the very lowest levels of football, you don't want a false step as a receiver. So that's the only thing I saw with him that's a real issue. But for my money, he I'm having trouble not calling him the best receiver in this class, including Devontae Smith, including Jalen Waddle, including Ja'Marr Chase. He does everything that you want him to. Like I said, Michael Thomas comes to mind. He can run away a little bit more than that. He's not quite as physical, but I can't see a world where if you put him in an offense that has passing plays, while people joke and say the Ravens might not, but where he doesn't end up being an 80 catch kind of guy. I think that he is the perfect kind of possession receiver and what the Ravens will be looking for. I think he's incredibly NFL ready right now. You know, it's too early to say where guys are going to go, but I wouldn't be shocked to see him go before 27. Maybe if, you know, the Kadarius Tonys and the Rondale Moores of the world end up getting into the first round a little bit more so, then he could last until 27. We did see DK Metcalf and AJ Brown and Debo Samuel all, you know, in a receiver heavy class, make it into the second round. So if the Ravens are able to get him at 27, that would be outstanding. And then the final guy that I've taken a look at is Azeez Ojulari out of Georgia, the edge rusher, another junior. Ojulari, undersized. There's a Yannick Ngakoue comp to him because he has that same cross chop move where he jumps and swats across with his inside hand, with his, usually with his left hand, because he lines up on the right side of the defense and then is able to turn the corner with that chop and then flip his hips and things like that. You see that. You see the speed rushing. He wins the arc. He can rip under. He takes good angles. He has good bursts off the line. He has good get off. I'm curious to see. I really hope that they at least do measurements at the NFL Combine. Wingspan is important for edge rushers, especially because Ojulari is not super tall. You see him able to use good hand placement on a long arm to kind of keep guys off of him, but he doesn't really have a long arm bull rush. You don't see that happen very often. You don't see him able to really go through. He does stunt well. He is explosive when he loops back inside on TE stunts and things like that, firing through and getting after the quarterback. But we haven't really seen a bull rush from him yet. I think that the long arm is there. He gets the placement. He just usually uses it to combo into a different kind of move. Against the run, he's a tough case study against the run. He's really willing against the run, especially against power concepts, against Bama. He had, you know, Deontay Brown pull against him from the right side to the left side, and he immediately recognized, and he sticks his shoulder down, and he just doesn't use his hands and stack the same way he does against the pass, but you know it's there because you've seen him do it against the pass. So I think, you know, getting him to work on stacking and when to stack and getting better in run recognition will be a good thing. I don't love his motor as a run defender. When he's rushing the passer, he has insane closing speed, and you just don't see it against the run the same way. And in Baltimore, that kind of gets beaten out of you. You have to run to the ball, all 11 to the ball, or you don't play. That is the classic, you know, when people talk about the Ravens, they are running to the football. It's a great story about Haloti Ngata yelling at Terrell Suggs, or I believe Haloti Ngata yelling at Terrell Suggs about not running to the ball and him not understanding, you know, what it was like to be a Raven. And we've seen that continue. But I think that a tough evaluation against the run, I'm ultimately probably going to settle on a second round grade for him. I just don't see the true elite athleticism. I see good get off. I see good prowess of how to win the edge, but I don't see him being able to work through guys. And Yannick Ngakoue, I think, is a good comp for him. I think Mike Renner of PFF put that one on first, and it's tough not to see where he's able to make plays against the run, but he feels a little bit more like a pass rush specialist. A lot of guys are giving him a first-round grade still, as opposed to a Kalaivon Chaisson. I think not quite as special athletically or in pursuit. Is a guy that kind of comes to mind a little bit, maybe not as long as Chaisson, but you see more technical prowess, you see more better hand usage in terms of rushing the passer, and then against the run, he's willing, but he's not refined yet. So I think he is a potential starter, but I think he makes an impact day one and is a pass rusher and can go get some pressures and things for you. But he kind of has outside linebacker size, a little like 4-3 off ball size, a little bit more. They put him there a few times, but you just don't see the same three down player in run situations. He does make some plays against the run and is willing to put his nose into the fan, as I said, but ultimately I think I'm going to settle on a second round grade. I don't think he might make it. You know, it's early to say, as I said, I don't see him making it to the end of the second round, but a lot of people are having him in the first round, and I think he makes an impact. I'm curious to see where he ends up going. There's a lot of kind of uncertainty with Kwity Paye and Jason Awa and Joseph Asai and a ton of different edge rushers in this class. Jalen Phillips as well. So I'm curious to see how this edge class pans out. I like what I've seen from Ojulari as a whole. He is younger, but just not a big, strong, stout guy against the run. And if you're not really a true three-down player, it's hard to justify some of that first round value. Maybe I regret it. Hopefully I do. Hopefully he ends up, you know, being a 100-sack guy in his career. But at this point, I think I'm giving a second-round grade. And those are the three guys I've looked at so far. So make sure to check those out on BaltimoreBeatdown.com. I'm trying to do one a day. That's my goal. I don't know if I'm going to get them up. It's a little tough to get them all posted the same day and everything like that. But I'm going for it. That's a goal I've set. So hopefully I'll have, you know, 40, 50, 60 of them done by the time April rolls around. I'm looking at guys that I think make an immediate impact in Baltimore. And those are three that I think would.
Yeah, absolutely amazing analysis by Spencer there. He could talk about the draft for hours, so go check out his stuff on BaltimoreBeatdown.com. But Spencer, that's all that I have for you today. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And when we get back next week, we'll still be in that kind of lull period before free agency and before the draft, but that does not mean the content stops.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on, Kevin. Make sure to check out the SIS Rookie Handbook as well, which is coming out here soon. It's been sent to the publisher and will be available for purchase online. The SIS Rookie Handbook. It has one of the most comprehensive draft guides with insight. It's been, most prospects are broken down by multiple guys, and we cut together a good composite of what we like about these prospects and what we don't. So a ton of work went into that one. I think it's in the $25 range. Make sure to go get a copy of that as well. Make sure to give Kevin a 5-star review in those iTunes review charts and reward the man who gives you the best daily Ravens coverage. Thank you again, Kevin, for having me on, and I'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks so much, Spencer. When we get back here tomorrow, it's more Ravens talk from us, so stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.